There we go. Welcome to another edition. I thought it was being censored. That's the Sunday show that has to be censored now. But anyway, welcome to Subject to Galactica, I guess it should be. I don't know.
Turn on the fucking mic, dude.
Hey. And then, actually, a couple of people are in there in the chat room from the, I just lost a listener now, from the Battlestar Galactica message board, and thank them for coming in to help me get some listeners. The show is excellent. Of course, the first, the two-hour premiere of the new series Galactica was Friday night, and had a two-hour premiere, which was excellent. It's the old premise of the Cylons destroying the colonies, but then they've tweaked it. They've made Starbuck a woman. Boomer is I think she's a Korean woman, and they've you know, Adama is now Edward James Olmos. But I think it's an outstanding show. It's a new slant on science fiction drama and other net. And we're going to have a guest coming up in just a few minutes. I'm going to shift gears. It's going to be Jeff from the geopoliticalreview.com. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And we'll run through the news just quickly. Bush's second inauguration, of course, we know is tomorrow. He's at the inaugural prequel. President Bush visited the National Archives on Wednesday to view the Declaration of Independence and to read it for the first time in his life. But no, the Constitution and other historic documents. He wanted to see if they're still there because he saw that movie National Treasure and want to make sure the Declaration is still there. And he participated in an inaugural.
And a Bill of Rights. I don't think he's ever seen those either. Yeah.
What are those? We know what he knows. We know he knows the Ten Commandments. He participated in an inaugural extravaganza and attended three candlelight dinners with the biggest donors to the inauguration. Security is high. The threat of terrorism prompted what authorities promised to be the tightest inaugural security ever deployed. And Bush's approval rating. He begins his new term with the lowest approval rating at any point of any recent two-term president, 49% in an Associated Press poll. So, and there's somebody else to join in. So hopefully the Galactica posting is going to help get some listeners in here.
Are we going to do an over-under on what his his approval rating will dip down to?
I'd probably go down 40%. What do you think?
I think he's going to go below 40%.
Really? Wow. Chat room, what do you think? I know B-Shot's in there, but this can't be all about Galactica. But as much as I like to, but maybe in a couple weeks we'll do a Galactica show, get somebody on from the cast or something. The inaugural luncheon menu for President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Dignitaries and members of the Congress at the Capitol on Thursday after inauguration. They all go to the Capitol for the soiree they have there. The first course is going to be scalloped crab and lobster. Ugh. Second course, roasted Missouri quail with chestnuts and brimmed root vegetable. Missouri dank quail, maybe? I don't know. Third course, steamed lemon pudding. Oh, that sounds awful. And apple wild cherry compote, whatever that is. I never heard that. The china will feature a woodland design set on an amber-colored pressed velvet tablecloth. Wow, the table centerpiece will be a unique arrangement of berries, leaves, and roses. Wow. And also Washington's famous Willard Hotel is sweet on presidential inaugurations. The goodies are going to be organizing. They have 25,000 desserts. Wow. 1,000 pounds of chocolate-resist confections as chocolate cowboy boots, chocolate elephants, chocolate sculptures, white chocolate medallions bearing a presidential seal. And what else here? Creme brulee would be on there with a sugar coating heated by hand with a blowtorch. Sugar-crusted yellow rose petals dipped in chocolate. Jelly candies that actually taste like roses. Ugh. And what else? By the numbers, 55,000 people are expected to attend the 9 official inaugural balls. 300 number of horses are going to be in the inaugural parade. 120 minutes is going to be supposedly the duration of the parade. 100 gallons of red, white, and blue popcorn are being supplied for the inauguration. 36 high temperature is going to be the forecast for inauguration day. And 2 miles is the parade route. So,
Is he going to walk?
I don't think so. Do you? Oh, he'd be crazy to walk. I don't think he's going to walk, do you?
I don't think so either.
And ex-presidents are going to attend the Bush inauguration, which is a tradition, but three of President Bush's predecessors will join him on the platform Thursday as he is sworn in. Former presidents, President Carter and his wife, Rosalynn, President Clinton and Senator Hillary Rodham. Bush's parents will be there, of course. President Ford, who is 91 and is too frail to travel, he will not attend. And as I said, it's a tradition for them to show up at the inaugurations. And some of the big donors. 53 companies gave the maximum of $250,000 donations toward President Bush's inauguration this week. Top of the list is LVRocks.com of Las Vegas. Whoa! Where's our money? Thanks, Gabe.
Then Auto Credit Union number 2 out of Boulder Highway. We donated.
Tap Out Show is... Oh, no, that's a Democratic way. It's censored.
TapOutShow.com, yeah.
We gave him Jeff. Some of the top donors is A.G. Spanos from Stockton, California.
Well, I sent him a dictionary as a donation.
Jeff?
No, I sent Bush a dictionary.
I mean, Ebonics, we could pronounce the words correctly. It said nuclear, you know, right? You can't say nuclear. A.J. Spanos, who owns the Chargers, other prominent companies, AT&T, of course, in Washington, Bristol-Myers
Squibb. The Chargers send them money?
$250,000.
I am so glad the Jets beat them now. Good for them.
That's why. Dr. Miriam Adelson from Las Vegas. Her husband runs the Venetian. And Occidental Petroleum Company was once run by Arm & Hammer. He was there. He used to run the company, and they donated $250,000 to the Bush inaugural inauguration. Pfizer and a lot of drug companies in there from New York. Sheldon Adelson from Las Vegas. So between the two of them, the husband and wife, they gave $500,000 to the Bush inaugural. So Wachovia Corporation, Jackson. What does giving $250,000 to inauguration committee mean for investors? Absolutely nothing. But, you know, they have those goofy commercials. But what does creating glass have to do with, I mean, what the hell? Just tell me what we can do for the people who want to deposit their money in their bank, for crying out loud. And what's going on? Oh, the chat room has gone up for grabs now. Bush views the file traders, internet piracy. Oh, boy. Bush thanks the troops. Oh, and I believe Jeff is on the line from Geopolitical Review. Hello? Hello?
How are you?
How you doing there?
Good, how you doing?
All right. First of all, give the listeners information about your site. Is it a site or a blog? It looks more like a site than a blog.
I mean, it uses the blogging technology.
Yeah.
It's sort of a hybrid. You know, I report a lot of news on there, but I also try to have my own commentary, you know, every once in a while to sort of mix it up a little bit. Okay. Add a little to the site, so to speak.
And now, give those listening who haven't been to your blog, or your blog, what's your blog about?
It basically focuses on international news. The name of it's Geopolitical Review.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I tend to focus on, like, geopolitical issues, you know, between, you know, anything that is out there that is, you know, big news between states, and anything that... And we try not to focus so much on what's making the headlines, but the things that aren't reported as well.
Hmm.
So the things that might go under the radar.
Some things that are the U.S. media doesn't pick up on, or something else happens that overshadows, like the tsunami or something
right,
else,
like,
correct?
We wouldn't focus, you know, we wouldn't report exactly on the tsunami, but we report on things that are going behind the scenes.
Hmm.
Or, you know, in one specific example would be the stingy remark by the U.N., official.
Jan,
right, I think he was a Dutch guy.
Yes.
And we wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't exactly report what he had said, but I would talk about my opinion on what he said.
What was your opinion on what he said, by the way, since we touched that subject?
I thought it was a little bit out of line.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about that on there, about how when people call the U.S. stingy, they do use that one statistic that basically is... there's one part of the whole aid situation that makes the U.S. look bad, and that's the one per capita, like GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't factor in other things such as military aid or personal contribution by Americans, which is a lot larger than the actual aid from the government.
True, because the government, Bush gave, he's committed, he pledged, with $350 million, and now the taxpayers ourselves, we've donated over $200 million, correct?
Right, exactly. I think that's about what it is up now. I've kind of lost track. But, I mean, there's also the military aid aspect of it. I believe the Pentagon said initially they were spending about $3 million a day
mm-hmm.
on air transport and, you know, fuel for the ships and things like that.
Well, definitely. The USS Abraham Lincoln and that whole battle group is over there, and it's expensive keeping that ship there. And they're using the ship to process clean water for those people over, because I believe they say you could process 80,000 gallons of clean water a day over there.
Right, exactly. So, and that's not cheap, and that's something that isn't factored into the per capita GDP aid. And also the other thing about that is that the U.S. military does allow other countries to use resources for other things non-military. For instance, because the U.S. is the one that patrols the seas and keeps the shipping lanes open, it allows, you know, Germany, France, well, not so much France, they do spend a lot on their military, but Germany or the Netherlands or a country like that to shift money away from defense towards other things such as social programs or, you know, maybe international aid too.
Now, what is your background?
My background is I studied international studies at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, congratulations. Good
for
you.
Thank you. I got a bachelor's degree from there, and I took a few years off before going back to school. I worked as a paralegal at an immigration law firm in Washington, D.C. We mostly focused on business immigration. So we did a lot of work visas for skilled workers from multinational corporations such as Booz Allen Hamilton, BAE Systems, Fujitsu, that sort of thing. We did do some individual work as well, but mostly on the business aspect. And after leaving that, my work this summer, before going back to law school, I actually took 5 weeks off and traveled around Europe with my wife, and we visited about 11 countries, I think it was.
Wow.
It was a good time, and we got to, you know, meet a lot of people over there, see some things, and it had changed a lot since I'd last been over there to Europe before September 11th.
Very good.
And after the Europe trip, I went back to school, law school at the University of Baltimore, where I'm currently working on a law degree, and I hope to focus on international comparative law.
Hmm. Now, so you intend to go into law, or you have aspirations for political office, or? You know?
I want to keep everything open. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that's been talked about, and it's always an option. I don't necessarily want to be an attorney, so to speak, but I would like to use the skills in another sort of, maybe in another sort of related profession, or I wouldn't mind going into actually being a typical attorney for a few years and then maybe going back and getting a master's in public policy with a focus on international relations.
Okay. Well, so with that, you should be able to get some kind of a job at the UN or a member of Congress.
Yeah, I'm looking right now, looking down the road, maybe some think tanks or, some of the law firms to focus more on, like, international business or international security, something along those lines.
Now, what made you start your blog? I mean, we've had sort of like last week we had from Mark from American Future, and he said he didn't have a job, and this took up a lot of it as a new hobby for him. It's kind of taken over his life.
Right.
What made you start your blog?
Well, the first blog I ever read was Healing Iraq. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes. Yes.
It's one of those the Iraq blogs that came out after Saddam was overthrown. And so I was reading that for a while, and then I actually responded to an article that was in one of the Seattle newspapers written by Matt Rosenberg, and he had written about Healing Iraq, and I emailed him saying it was a good article. It brought to attention that there are all these Iraqi blogs out there. And he got back to me, and we communicated for a while, and he sent me an email link one day that he had started a blog. And I started following it, and I was like, this sounds like a really good idea. So, from there I just looked around, and basically he was the one that influenced me to start my own blog about early 04.
Oh,
when I got started.
Wait, really? Because your blog is really, it's amazing, all the information you have on there. I mean, I could swear that thing's been around for, years, because you see the depth is it's just simply amazing.
Yes, it's been a work in progress. I've had some help. I don't know much of the IT side of it, so I've had to get a lot of help with that. And I'll give a little plug for her, but Melanie, actually she lives in Australia, and she's helped me out a lot putting it together. She's really good at that.
Very good.
It's helped a lot.
Now, what issues did you get the most response from your blog? You put something up there, all of a sudden you get bombarded with 100 emails. I mean, what is it? Is it something with Iraq or the military or...
It's a little bit of everything. I tend to get good feedback on things that on articles that people haven't heard about. One of the things I like to focus on is I try to report on, I guess what I would call like oil politics, such as, there's like China right now, something I posted to, I believe it was yesterday or this morning, about how China is setting up military bases throughout the Southeast Asia, basically from the Middle East all the way back to, their over in the South China Sea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not something that really gets a lot of attention, but China's...
A lot of oil over there.
Right. Well, there's a lot of oil in China. I mean, that's one of the factors of why oil prices are increasing so much, is China is just gobbling it up. And you don't hear a lot about that. And that's something that gets good feedback, is a lot of the little energy deals that are going on around the world. You know, there's Venezuela, too, which is another big player.
Yeah, and I saw something, I don't know if it was on your blog, or I jump around so much during the day when I can. They said that Venezuela apparently has told the United States to keep their mitts out of their affairs. Is that correct?
I believe it's... they don't want to give up on us totally, because mm-hmm. we are a very big customer of theirs. But they are in the process. They were in talks with Colombia to actually build a pipeline through Colombia so that they could have better access to the west coast of South America, which basically would open up for China specifically, but also the west coast of the United States as well. But there's some diplomatic problems right now between Colombia and Venezuela that put that on hold. But that's something that they're looking to, is to, you know, they want to get in on the Chinese oil market right now.
Now, I'm on your blog right now. What's going on with the anti-Semitism in France?
Right. That was something I came across today. That's another thing I try to follow quite frequently, is that, I mean, anti-Semitism has definitely been on the rise in Europe the last few years. And there are, you know, there's a few factors with that, that between the rising Muslim populations and what I consider anti-Semitism disguised as anti-Israel sentiment, where they will often sign, you know, Europeans, and you see that a lot in the American left here too, is that people will criticize Israel pretty, you know, they'll vilify them. There's some pretty awful things they say about Ariel Sharon and things like that, and then they just say, you know, they try to say that they're not anti-Semitic, they're just anti-Israel. But when you see that there are double standards, they don't apply the same criteria to everybody. For instance, they complain about Israeli occupation, but they ignore Syria's occupation of Lebanon, or they ignore the Chinese occupation of Tibet, that kind of thing. And it makes it pretty clear that there is a double standard, which plays into the anti-Semitism instead of anti-Israel sentiment. But it's definitely increasing in Europe, and it is something to be concerned about. I mean, it tends to be a precursor of worse things to come.
Now, looking at, and of course, tomorrow's the inauguration, looking forward to President Bush's second term, where do you think he's going to face his world crisis? It's still probably going to be Iraq, and now it looks like Iran's going to be a problem, because they apparently are sending some covert operations into there.
Iran seems to be I guess you would call it the sexy choice. Everyone seems to pick that one as what's, you know, going to be the next trouble spot. I don't know. I think Iran is, I mean, there, well, first with Iraq is, that's definitely going to take up a lot of his second term. I mean, you know, today with the last couple of days with the Condi Rice, I mean, that's been the topic pretty much of her whole confirmation.
What'd you think of that? I mean, Barbara Boxer, my goodness, she tore into her like, I don't know what. I kept saying, where was she last year when everybody was running for president? She should have been in there. I mean, she let her have it. I mean, and then I wasn't going to get to that right now, but since she hit it, where was that? Does she really, about mistakes and how she got her to admit they made some bad decisions? And
she tore into her, that's for sure.
Barbara Boxer, just between her and Joe Biden, the two of them, the only two on that committee there that really... Kerry kind of danced around a little bit, but I mean, those two just went at, you know, they said that she's pretty, you know, I think Biden voted for her, but Boxer and Kerry voted against her. I mean,
they were the lone two to vote against
her. I mean, did you watch any of that testimony that she was given? I mean, just it was, you know, when it got, I think she was cringing every time she got the Barbara Boxer. I thought I saw her popping a couple of Maalocs in there. I thought she wasn't going to throw up, but I mean, she just hit her, I mean, left and right. I mean, nothing nasty. I thought, you know, I think that's probably why they probably thought it's a woman going after a woman. It's all right. I think some of the men probably thought, well, I don't want to look like I'm beating up on this, on her, because she's a woman and she's black, and I don't want to get any backlash.
Exactly.
But Barbara Boxer just didn't care. I mean, especially with Dianne Feinstein. She's the one who introduced her at the beginning of the hearing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that they did go a little easy on her. Not to say they weren't hard on her, but mm-hmm. a lot easier than they probably wanted to, because they don't want to come off, like you said, as being too aggressive. Because, you know, they want to push the envelope as much without reaching that backlash.
Yeah, especially the Democrats. Yeah. And then, because now President Bush, I don't know if you've been in the Washington Post, I don't know if you saw that, I think it was yesterday, he said that the public's decision to reelect him was a ratification of his approach toward Iraq, and there was no reason to hold any administration officials accountable for mistakes from adjustments or misjudgments in pre-war planning or in managing the violent aftermath. I mean, I don't know what that was about. That's crazy. I mean, just because he got reelected, there's no reason why they shouldn't, you know, zero in on these mistakes that were made.
Right,
you know
no,
mean?
I agree. I mean, if people, you know, if there are egregious mistakes, people should be held accountable. I think that the call for Donald Rumsfeld's head is a little out of line. I mean, yeah. He has done a lot of good things, and people tend to forget that a lot, you know, I mean, war, by its nature, things go wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, he certainly should have planned for certain things and should have been better, you know, better well prepared, but, you know, even looking back, if you go and look back at the history of World War II, I mean, there were a lot of bad things that happened that, you know, over the years tend to be forgotten about, and everyone thinks it was just a smooth, you know, smooth operation, which it wasn't. I mean, if you read, you know, if you read below the superficial readings in your, you know, in your textbooks or mm-hmm. even on the History Channel, I mean, you see that there's a lot of, every war is like that, basically.
Yeah, wars aren't pretty. I mean, they're
no,
not supposed
not.
To be.
I mean, that's why you try to avoid it, but...
Yeah. Now, what do you think of Colin Powell? I mean, today he said he bid farewell to the State Department. He had a big celebration in the, I guess, the grand foyer there in the main lobby, and he said he told them that they were his troops and everything. I mean, I thought he's a great man. I mean,
yeah.
I think, really, he should have been the defense secretary, because I think this whole Iraq thing would have ended up totally different if he was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
there are some people that argue that he's actually the one that would have made it worse, because he actually wanted a lot more troops. He wanted a full occupation, while Rumsfeld wanted to do what they did in Afghanistan, was basically turn power over right away back to the Afghanistan people, which is, you know, what they should have done from the first. But they ended up wasting basically a whole year while they, you know, messed around trying to find out who was going to be in charge, and they had the governing council, which was completely inept. But there is a school of thought that a lot of that was influenced by Powell to draw it out.
Hmm.
And he wanted he wanted an actual occupation, while Rumsfeld just wanted to get in there. I guess sort of the whole neocon philosophy, just get in there, turn it over,
get out,
and try to get out.
Huh.
But,
well, I mean,
it's hard to tell that. It's a lot of these, you know, backroom conversations that are difficult to verify, so you have to take them with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, I never really know what went into the decision-making process until years down the road, when these books are written, and then you got to put one against the other, because they're all going to look at it from their own point of view.
Right.
But are you glad that the Senate panel seems to be going to send Connie Rice on her way?
Yeah, I think she'll do a good job. Secretary of State, I probably wouldn't have pictured her being there if you said that 2 years ago, but I think she'll do a good job. I mean, she knows one of the things that needs to be dealt with in the Bush administration the second term is with Russia, and, you know, and their regression in democracy, and Putin what seems to be trying to strengthen his control there. And Condi has a lot of experience in Russian affairs. And I think that she could be able to help out with that a lot, and maybe even try to bring them on board more in the war on terrorism, too, which would be a big help.
Yeah, because, you said they are slipping back into, seems like, communism. I mean, Putin had that industrialist thrown in jail, and they just auctioned off his company. And
right.
Apparently the press that was there, apparently now it's back underneath the government's thumb over there. I mean, I don't know what more we
can... And they were meddling in Ukraine and...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, with that whole election nonsense over there, and then Yushchenko being poisoned and all that, it's crazy, you know?
Right.
But going back to Connie Rice, I got the quotes I was looking for. Barbara Boxer, she said she laid part of the blame for the death of U.S. troops in Iraq at Rice's door, saying that she oversold the reasons for the war. She knows, Barbara Boxer said, I know not everyone agrees with her. This war and all these horrific deaths and the wounded and all that is a direct result of not leveling with the American people. What do we think of that? That comment, that was strong.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit out of line. I mean, the case for war was made pretty clearly. Everyone, you know, there was pretty much a world consensus on the WMD factor. I mean, it turns out now that apparently it was incorrect. But, you know, everybody in the world believed that that was the case. I mean, whether you talk to the Russians or the French or anyone, you know, anyone in the Middle East believed it. And, I don't know, in the terrorism ties. I mean, when you go down the line of everything that was used as justification, I think, in my mind, I think it's pretty strong. I mean, some of it is pretty weak, you know, has been weakened, such as the WMD factor. But in my mind, that was, none of that was ever the ultimate reason for the Bush administration to go in there, or for why I supported it. And it was mostly for the democracy effect is why I ended up supporting it.
Now, what do you think? I thought yes, Saddam should have been removed from power, but I thought we should have finished what we're doing in Afghanistan first and gotten Osama bin Laden, and then, you know, take care of Saddam Hussein. I mean, I'm off for getting rid of him. I don't like the timing
right.
of it. I just thought Afghanistan.
No, I mean that way of thinking may be correct. I mean, it's, you know, difficult to tell at this point. In some sense, I want to say that Afghanistan at that point was. I mean, it wasn't completely finished, obviously. I mean, there's still Taliban remnants, obviously bin Laden's still loose. But at that time, it seemed like it was as good as it could get at that point, because if bin Laden was in Pakistan, there was no way we could get him. You know, you could have 500,000 troops in Afghanistan, and it wouldn't do any good. I mean, Musharraf wasn't on our side at that point. We didn't have anything on him at that point. But, you know, eventually we did with the nuclear black market situation with scientist Khan, but I just don't think that at that point Afghanistan could have been really done any better, honestly.
Now, going through some of the headlines, I got the election is in Iraq is next week. They say now the government's starting to lower their expectations for the once heralded Iraqi vote. A lot of people are saying to me it's going to be a killing field over there.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. I actually heard that from a family friend this weekend. He thought it was going to be, you know, a bloodbath. Mm-hmm. And it may be, but, I mean, a lot of people predicted that for Afghanistan, and I was very pleased to wake up the next morning and find out that nothing happened.
Yeah.
But I do think that Iraq is a lot more volatile than Afghanistan was at that point, and there's probably is going to be a lot of bloodshed.
Well, just the car bombings these last few days have been crazy.
Right.
I mean, I forget how many soldiers were killed. Iraqi police, I think it's 14 over the weekend, and
that seems to be a daily occurrence at this point.
Yeah. Now, I think some of this is crazy about their election. I mean, these people in Iraq don't know who the candidates are. They don't know where they're going to vote. I mean, I think that's nuts. I mean, how are you supposed to go vote for somebody? You don't know who the candidates are and what they stand for. I mean, that's nuts, you know?
No, I mean, there are some polls that have shown that they are pretty excited about voting, though. I mean, the process, there was a poll recently that said like 85% of them intended to vote that were eligible for it. And, you know, that's a positive sign. I mean, that's something to, you know, that gives reason to be hopeful that it will turn out all right. But, I mean, I think there definitely will be car bombs. There's definitely going to be, you know, RPGs and all that. But, I don't know. I mean, it's been done in circumstances such as this. I mean, the Republicans and conservatives will point to, I believe it's El Salvador, where they did that. And, I don't know. I mean, they had people getting shot at, sniped at as they were going to the polls, and they did it. They still voted. And El Salvador is a pretty stable country these days. It was a couple years later after the election. And the rebels basically gave in.
Now, we touched on the beginning when you first came on. What do you think of these reconnaissance missions? Supposedly they were performing over in Iran. Seymour Hersh, I don't know if you read his article in the New Yorker magazine, he talked about it. He's the one who blew the Abu Ghraib scandal wide open.
Right.
Now people are saying, debunking it, say, oh, he's full of it and everything else. But now they said, they come back and they said, well, he was right about the prison thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
he was right about the prison thing to an extent. He did embellish a few things about it and tried to make it a lot larger than it was. But back to the Iran situation, I think that he probably is somewhat accurate. I'm not surprised that they're having reconnaissance missions in there now. I mean, it'd almost be silly not to, considering that Iran is pretty close to getting a nuclear weapon, and it won't be as easy to destroy the production facilities as it was in Iraq in the 80s when the Israelis did it. So they need to be gathering intelligence about it, and they need to be prepared for basically all situations. I have heard a lot of people saying that Pentagon, you know, although they criticized his reporting, they didn't actually deny it. They just denied certain aspects of it. So,
We think that archbishop that was kidnapped over there over the weekend. I think they reported Monday, but I think it was over the weekend. The archbishop was kidnapped over in Iraq in Baghdad. Have you heard anything new about him?
He was released pretty quickly, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten up there. I was looking for it all weekend and see if he was or not.
Yeah, I think I saw that he was released. It was almost like the next day or so, I think.
Because I know the Vatican was upset about it as well, that they demanded that his release. I was hoping, like, please don't let anything happen to him. It's all we need is for an archbishop to get beheaded or something. I mean, they'll rile up, you know, the Catholics, and you know, it's already a mess over there as it is.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking here. It looks like he was freed.
Oh, well, very good.
They said on the 18th, so I guess that was on Tuesday.
That was Tuesday. And then, have you been following the oil for food fiasco?
I have. I've been following that. Pretty closely for a while.
An Iraqi American supposedly was charged last week, I believe it was, right, over pocketing millions of dollars. For do you know much about that? I mean, is he going to scapegoat for the whole thing, or is this just the beginning?
He's the very first person that's going to go down in this, and I think it's the first in what should be not a long line because there wasn't a whole lot of actual Americans involved. But I think that his pleading guilty signifies that he was willing to exchange names for a lighter sentence or something. I actually reported on, I summarized basically the American involvement in oil for food. It was a couple months back. And there's Vincent, there was another Iraqi American who was very active in, let me see, I can pull it up here. He was very active in pro-Saddam propaganda in the United States. I mean, he traveled to Baghdad before the second Gulf War with Congressman Jim McDermott from Washington, Mike Thomas from California, and David, I'm going to butcher his last name, but Boynoir from Michigan. And the four of them traveled
Bonnier,
to Iraq.
David Bonnier,
yes. Yeah. And then there's a third person whose name is Oscar Wyatt. He's an oil man from Texas. And he says he got everything legally. He says it was all, you know, done through the appropriate people. But the wild card is Mark Rich. I don't know if you've heard anything about his involvement.
No. Mark Rich. I mean, is that the Clinton wake-up guy that he pardoned?
Exactly.
Oh, no.
His name surfaced about a month or so ago. ABC News, actually, who I'll give them credit. You know, I'm very critical of the mainstream media, but ABC News has been very... very on top of the oil for food scandal. They were actually one of the first ones to report that.
Them and Fox.
All those names a few months back in, it was actually January of 2004. They were the first American outlet to publish that infamous list that had everyone who took oil vouchers.
Really? Now, see, Fox News is taking credit for all this stuff. They're saying that they're the first one there and nobody else is reporting it.
Well, they're the ones reporting it, you know, 100 times a day. But
yeah.
ABC News tends to be the one that breaks a lot of the big information.
You're right. Yeah,
but
Fox
Mark
team's
Rich, apparently.
He's involved in this?
Yes, apparently his role is that he served as a middleman for the four or five American oil companies or foreign oil companies that didn't want, you know, they knew they weren't supposed to be doing it, so they would use Mark Rich as the middleman to get into Iraq to get at the oil.
So
it'll be interesting to see what happens with that if he ends up.
Well, he never did come back, right? I know he's still.
No, I think he's still in Switzerland.
Oh, we'll never see him again. I mean, he's going to stay over there. I mean, what a piece of work he is, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, first the whole pardon fiasco, and then now this. I mean, I don't know.
I told people, I was like, in the interest of full disclosure, when I talked about Mark Rich, I was like, he was the tipping point in my viewpoint of Bill Clinton. I always was okay with Clinton. You know, even through all the scandals, Monica Lewinsky and all that, but once the Mark Rich pardon happened, that was when I started to lose respect for Clinton when I started to focus more on his negatives than positives, but I thought that was the low point of his presidency.
Well, the pardon's going to be a big black mark on his legacy. Same thing with the Monica Lewinsky, you know, the blue dress thing is going to be like, you know, hanging over him like a rock forever until you know, in the history books. I mean, that's
right.
You know, I like what Clinton did domestically with refinancing the debt and paying down the deficit, but some of the stuff that that Mark Rich pardon bothers me. I mean, I lean left on most things, but I'm common sense. Yeah, I'm not going to put a blind eye towards Clinton. I mean, he was. You know, good and bad. He's like a mixed bag you got from him. I mean, but I don't know. I don't know. But, I mean, this oil for food thing is just is ridiculous, huh?
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, there are some that are trying to say that it's overblown. Mm. And there is some truth to that, that the committees, the U.S. committees that are investigating are tending to inflate the actual amount that was stolen.
Yeah.
They're trying to combine smuggling in addition to kickbacks and oil vouchers and everything to, you know, to bump up the numbers and, you know, hope to grab some headlines. But it's definitely a mess. It may not be as big as some are trying to make it, but it's definitely a mess.
Huh. Now, we think of Mahmoud Abbas. I mean, he's supposed to be clamping down on these terrorists, on these attacks over there in Gaza. What do you think of Abbas?
I mean, I think he offers a chance, but at the same time, I think only someone as strong as Arafat ever really could have given, you know, the authority for all these, for, you know, Hamas and Islamic Jihad to lay down their weapons. I don't think Abbas has the power to do that, and he hasn't really shown that he's willing to take action. I mean, he's talked a lot.
Mm.
He said he's going to, you know, do this and that, but I don't know that he's willing, and he's indicated that he's not. And B, I don't think he has the power to do it.
He seems like he's just a puppet or a figurehead.
Right.
He doesn't have any true power over there.
Exactly. Now, to be honest, I don't think that situation is going to be resolved until you can cut off funding from Syria and Iran. I think, and I guess, you know, Saudi Arabia too. I think those three just provide so much.
And the United States gives them money
to that fight. That without that, until they're cut out of the picture, there's not much you can do about it.
I have a question actually from the chat room. They're starting to chime in now. It's a little off topic, but what's your opinion on Hillary Clinton running for president in 2008?
I think
she'll run, but I don't think she stands a chance because she's
I think
East
she'll
Coast.
Run. I don't think she will either. I remember during the primary, the Democratic primary, I guess it was last year, last spring, I remember seeing a poll that was taken about how each of the Democratic candidates would stack up getting a percentage of the vote. And the only person to do worse than Howard Dean was Hillary Clinton, because there's only a certain number she can get, which is probably, 40% maybe?
Which is,
and she can't really get over that threshold because she turns off so many people that I don't think she can get enough without completely destroying her opponent somehow or being able to position herself more as a moderate. But
Or if the Republicans put up a pretty weak candidate in 2008.
Right.
I mean, right now there's nobody on the horizon, which is the first time, I think, for both parties that neither one of them have somebody you can actually see rising up in 2008. I mean, you know, the Republicans, their bench is empty.
I've heard talks about Jeb Bush. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's a bad idea, too.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani is another one.
Oh, no, he won't make it either, because I think the American people, I don't want to sound like I'm anti-Semitic or anything, but I don't think, just the way he looks, I don't think the American people, he looks like a bad accountant, you know?
Right.
And then the American people will never have a president named Rudy. I can't see them talking about President Rudy. And I mean, he's got problems that make Clintons look small, you know what I mean? And it's same thing. Pataki, he won't, because he looks like Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell. I mean,
I've lived in New York before. I wouldn't want Pataki.
No. It's got to be somebody you got to look presidential to be president.
See,
Orlando's got a question.
I'm just saying. I mean, you guys were bashing my man Bubba, and now you're bashing my man Rudy.
Rudy doesn't stand a chance. I'm sorry. I stand a chance to be president, and Rudy Giuliani does. Does he know what? The American people will not elect somebody named Rudy, President Rudy.
Well, he said he lived in New York. Where did you live in New York?
I lived in Buffalo.
Ah.
Other side of the state.
Ah.
Well, yeah.
Where all the snow is, right?
What's that?
Where all the snow is?
Yeah, where all the snow is.
But, I mean, really, I mean, Mr. Belding will never be Pataki won't be president.
No.
I mean, he's got the balding thing going on. And Rudy's got the comb over. And I don't think...
Stop bashing Rudy.
I don't think McCain will make it either. Because, first of all, he's going to be old. He'll be 72.
Right. Yeah, he's pretty old.
Yeah, and his health is kind of shaky. And, you know, you can tell his age is starting...
Well, the Republicans don't even really like McCain. Most of them don't.
No, a lot of them hate him. I mean... But I mean, I really don't see you know, out there. I mean, the Democrats. I think the governor of was it Virginia, Mark Warner. He probably stands the best chance of it because he's a moderate, and you need that. You need a southern governor.
I've heard his name a lot too.
Yeah, and he's like a Clinton light. You know,
I like Evan Bayh from I believe Indiana.
You like him? Yeah, he reminds me of a John Edwards type. But, you know, he's got that goofy hair.
I actually didn't mind Edwards until, you know, he was active in the campaign and I didn't like some of his rhetoric. But I actually preferred him over John Kerry.
Yeah. A lot of people said that, Edwards probably would have defeated Bush if Edwards was at the top of the ticket.
I think he would have had a better chance, yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, Edwards, you don't really know because his wife, you know, is suffering from breast cancer. You don't know where, you know, how long that's going to, you know, 4 years, who knows, you know, where she's going to be standing. But, I mean, and out there you got, you know, Dean says he'll run in 08 if he's not in charge of the DNC. Now, I don't know how familiar with with domestic political issues, but, I mean, what do you think of the Democratic National Committee? Who's going to be running that?
From what I've seen, it looks like it. I mean,
Dean?
People are saying he's got it all but wrapped up. And I don't know. I think it's a bad idea for him. What I actually thought was going to happen, and I think why he is in the lead, is that I think he was going to threaten to take his people with him and start another party.
Oh, it was.
I could see him doing that. You know, he's so set on shaking up the system that you know, starting his own party, if he couldn't lead the party, would be the best way to shake up the system.
Yeah.
And I think that he might be using that as leverage.
Hmm. Now, looking at it from your perspective with your foreign policy and, you know, European look, what were their, the Europe and all of them, who were they thinking they wanted to be president of the United States? Did they want, obviously, most of them didn't want Bush because they thought he was a wild Texan and, you know, going to blow up the world.
Right.
You know, who were they wanting? Did they really want Kerry? Was it somebody else?
Yeah, they would love Kerry. He's their type of person. I think
he's French looking too, right?
He is French. His cousin, I believe, is actually a member of the French government. He's kind of he never made it very big. He's sort of like a second or third tier politician over there. But yeah, they would love him. I think deep down he envisions the United States being like Europe, you know, weak military, socialism, that kind of thing. I think he really, and they would like him a lot, and they would like him more than Bill Clinton, which is funny because they actually didn't care too much for Bill Clinton until they got a look at Bush, and then they were like, well, maybe he wasn't so bad after all.
Well, Clinton's like a god over there in parts of the world. I think in Ireland.
He's like a rock star over there now.
Oh, yeah. And Ireland, they love him. And, they all really seem to like him and everything.
I was over there when, you know, I'd go into bookstores, and his, you know, his biography was everywhere.
Wow. But were they buying it, though?
Yeah.
Oh,
they
really?
They were buying it. They had it in every language, and they had, it was flying off the shelves from what I could tell.
But they liked Clinton. And what do they think about the United States now? Are they starting to calm down in their rhetoric? Are they really still hate us because of Bush and Iraq? Or, you know, what do you say?
There were some indications after Bush got reelected that the Bush hatred was transferring into American hatred. Because before they were always trying to say that they don't hate America, they just hate Bush. And a lot of people, you know, I heard a lot of people saying, well, that's phony. They really do hate Americans. And you'll see it once Bush is if Bush is reelected. And sure enough, you know, the day after we got the newspaper cover from, I think it was the Sun or one of those tabloids over in
how can 59 million people America
right,
be so dumb
one. And then you had a couple from Der Spiegel in Germany, which, you know, which is completely insulting to people. They were the ones that started the Jesus Land picture. Did you see that one?
Jesus Land? No.
They had a picture of like Canada and the U.S.
Oh.
And basically, they had all the blue states as part of Canada, and I think it was like the United States of Canada, and then they had all the red states like Jesus Land. And a lot of condescending remarks were in Der Spiegel.
The press is really different over there in Europe than it is in the United States. They're a little more, they really go at people. I mean, here they do, but not to the extent that the Europeans do, right?
Right. Well, the press over there is just very partisan. I mean, we, you know, some people think it's bad here. A lot of people think it's partisan, but it's nothing compared to over there.
Yeah. Now, in the chat room is asking, what's your opinion of how America and the rest of the world would react to a female vice president of the United States? I think they'd, I don't think, especially England and France out in Germany, I don't think they'd really, you know,
yeah,
wouldn't bother them.
I don't think it would.
Arabs would be a different story.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Southeast Asia, it probably wouldn't either. They have a long history of having women as their leaders, actually, in India.
Pakistan?
Right, Pakistan, those places. It's strange. I did take a class on foreign relations in India and Pakistan, and we talked about that. And a lot of it has to do with because they are very, basically, they have families that, you know, just keep taking over there all the time, whether it's the Gandhis or in Pakistan. But I think parts of the world would you know, welcome it, other parts might look down on it. Middle East would probably look down on it as weak and infidels and, you know, the usual.
Yeah, because a lot of it depends on who it is. I mean, right. If it's, you know, I know Hillary would never take the vice president's job, you know.
No.
I mean, if it's, you know, Elizabeth Dole, well, she's getting up there in years, too.
Yeah,
I mean, she take Barbara Boxer, maybe now she might take it. I mean, because she's really all over the news with the, you know, beating up on Connie
yeah,
Rice.
Yeah, I think she's trying to position herself as sort of the new Gingrich of the Democratic Party now.
Ah.
She's trying to. I heard someone else talk about that today as well.
Hmm.
But you know, they were saying it might not necessarily work for her. What worked for Newt in the 90s.
Yeah, because Barbara Boxer, she can come across when she's really rolling as, you know, nasty, and Gingrich kind of did, but he always had those goofy little remarks he made.
Right.
And I don't know if you had a chance to read his book. He's got a new book out about the 21st century contract with America.
I haven't. I've seen a lot of it on TV, though.
Yeah, now what do you think? Then there's rumblings that he may decide to run for president.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I heard that.
Yeah, what do you think of him? I mean, think the Europeans would like Newt Gingrich? I mean,
no, they wouldn't like him at all.
I wouldn't think so, because they didn't like him the last time around. The speaker.
No, I know people here that are fairly liberal, and I think if you mention the word Newt Gingrich to them or the name Newt Gingrich, that they would, you know, you could see them cringe on, you know, the cringe in their face.
Mm.
A lot of people would not be pleased with that.
Yeah, plus these guys own baggage.
Actually,
as well.
My wife and I were talking recently about a Newt Gingrich and Hillary Clinton matchup.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, you know, the exact opposite you can get.
The debate would be interesting because
he
was here in Vegas a few months ago, and I happened to interview him at the bookstore. And even he said he'd do it just to have the pleasure of debating Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he'd like to try and tear her up in a debate.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten his fill of Clintons yet, I guess.
No, but I mean, I don't know where this next election is going to go. I mean, Bush has got a lot to do. I mean, he's got he's got Iraq, he's got Iran. What about the Korean Peninsula? I mean, that's an issue that's kind of gone away for a while there. We had, you know, the tsunami and everything else, but that's still an issue, huh? North Korea?
It seems to be kind of at a crossroads right now. There's no set agreement on how to approach the situation. Mm. I think one of the reasons why the U.S. is kind of slow right now is that they think that they're close to implosion, which there are some signs of it.
The government?
Weird happenings there. About a month or so ago, Kim Jong-il's third wife, I think it is now, died or something, and he went into seclusion. A lot of his portraits were taken down around the country, and there was some talk that he was loosening his grip. And, you know, he's been in hiding a lot recently, I guess, and there were some just strange things coming out of that recently. There's a good blog that follows that. I think it's North Korea Zone. It's a good one to check on every once in a while.
Now, what blogs do you read? I don't know if you want to plug them, but I mean, do you jump around too, like I do? I hit like 20, 30 blogs a day.
Yeah, I do that. I just discovered Blog Lines. Do you use that service?
No, what's that?
It's sort of like a news reader type thing, and it organizes it all, and you don't actually have to go to each individual site.
It picks it
basically
up.
You just have a list of, like, you can have newspapers, anything, and it's a really easy way just to keep track of it. And I think that's how a lot of these guys like Glenn Reynolds and Instant Pundit keep track of all these things. It just organizes it really well. You might want to check it out. It's bloglines.com.
All right.
But anyways, the blogs I look at, obviously I check out the big ones. I check out Instant Pundit every once in a while. Little Green Footballs. There's a couple little ones that I like to check out.
Yeah.
There's the Transatlantic Intelligencer. It's a new one.
Oh.
And that's pretty good. I have all these links on my blog roll if people want to look at them. But another one would be The Diplomat. That's a new one. It's by some conservative foreign service officers, and they have interesting commentary.
Now, you've been blogging, since early last year. Now, where do you see your blog going in the future? I mean, some of these blogs have dropped off after the election, I've noticed.
Right.
You're still going. A lot of the big to medium ones and some of the small ones are still going.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think it's in, say, in 2008, where's your blog going to be?
Well, 2008, I probably won't be having as much time to do it because I'll be working full-time, hopefully, at a high-paying law firm or something, but I don't know. I still see myself doing it. I think I might eventually trail off with the excerpts from news and just focus completely on commentary, you know, like an entry every 2 days or something, or maybe even a day if I have the time for it.
Mm.
But
What's your opinion about the press? I noticed on your blog you have no trust in the press. The Harris poll had a poll about if only 22% of the people polled have trust the press. I mean, I think that might be generous because ever since that Dan Rather thing, I mean, just
I think so too. And it's actually been pretty constant on how low the trust is. It's surprising. Like every year or so, Gallup will come out with a poll, and it's, you know, it's about the same. This is actually the lowest one I've seen. But yeah, I just don't think people trust them, and I think it's sad because you need to be able to trust them.
Yeah, and then what do you think of the I had like a mixed opinion of CNN until the tsunami thing. Then I was like, wow, I mean, they really they showed the reach that they have and just the resources that CNN has. What's your opinion about CNN?
Yeah, they're good. They did a good job of the tsunami coverage. I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical of CNN, especially after the fall of Saddam. One of their chief correspondents. I wrote about it on there. I could look for it later. But I wrote about how he admitted that they censored their news when they were there because they needed to do it to protect their reporters in Iraq. So they would actually, clean their news, and they wouldn't report what actually was taking place because they feared for the reporters' lives, and to some extent you understand that, but at the same time you're like, well, if we can't report honestly, we shouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's true.
And and one other note is that they are the only American news outlet with an office in Cuba too, which says something.
Yeah, it's a little I opened it. I remember my client, like, huh, that's a little strange.
Right.
How'd they work that out? I mean, did Ted Turner go to Fidel and twist some arms, or did he send Jane down there? I mean, it makes you wonder. I mean, Fox isn't down there. I mean, MSNBC. Do you watch MSNBC? Seems like they're having all kinds of trouble over there. I mean, they canceled the. Who's leaving her show? Deborah Norville's leaving her program. Mm-hmm. And of course,
I actually like MSNBC. I think they do a good job.
I like Hardball. Hardball's pretty good. And then they canceled, who else? CNN canceled Crossfire. I mean, what do you think of that move? I mean, I knew as soon as they brought down that insult dog, it was all over with for Crossfire. I mean, they had the Triumph sitting there.
Yeah. I mean, they jumped the shark at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't like that. And I think the end might be near for Hannity and Combs, because if Crossfire is gone, what's that say about Hannity and Combs?
Right.
I don't
follow the ratings that much. I used to watch a lot of Bill O'Reilly, but I don't do that anymore.
Why? What happened to your opinion of Bill O'Reilly? That phone sex thing?
Well, you know, a lot of people would always, you know, say negative things about him, and I'd say he did a decent job of what he did, and he talked about a lot of stories people wouldn't talk about. But he defended Dan Rather in one of his weekly columns, and he basically was apologizing for the guy and saying that he was smeared by these, you know, internet people.
He's got a real problem with the internet, Bill O'Reilly.
He does.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but I mean, I don't know why he stuck up for Dan Rather. I think he worked for CBS, I think, for a while.
He did. He worked for Dan Rather. I mean,
there you go.
They're kind of buddies.
Oh, well.
And so it was almost like, you know, he's always tries to say he's outside of that circle, and it was like at that point, he re-entered the circle, and he came back, and now he's part of the mainstream media. He's part of the elite media now.
Yeah, plus he showed up on the tsunami thing, too. He showed up on that tsunami thing with George Clooney, too. I noticed that the other night, and Chris Matthews was there. And we got about 2 minutes left, so you give out your blog address again. Time kind of flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's www.geopoliticalreview.com.
Very good.
And I think you had a link up.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Your site, so people
I do.
Can go. Check that out.
And you got a link up on your site to LV Rocks, and I appreciate it in my blog. And then, so you know, the show will be archived. It'll be up on over on spankwagon.net. It's an affiliate of LV Rocks. You click on archives, it'll be over there. And anything, you only got like a minute left. Anything that's going on, you think that we should be looking at that we're not, or anything you're working on for on your blog for tomorrow?
I don't have anything in mind for the blog right now. I do think that I think Syria is actually the next place that is the next target. I think Iran is to a certain extent, but there's a lot of internal dissent in Iran that, with a little bit of pushing, could bring them down. But I think Syria is the one that's going to take a lot more work. And I think that's where a lot of the emphasis will will be in this in the next term, honestly.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We'll have you on again, maybe after the Iraqi election.
Yeah, definitely.
And work on some kind of rotation with you and Mark over at the American Future, because he wanted to come back on after that, too, to talk about the implications of the Iraqi election and anything that happens. So, All right. Well, thank you very much.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. You too. Ah, that was Jeff from Geopolitical Review on the show, and
I don't believe it. You bashed Bubba.
No, I like
all
Clinton.
This within
I like
1 hour.
Clinton.
You bashed Bubba, you bashed Rudy, and then you started pooping on Triumph, the instant comic dog. Is anybody safe with you?
I go all over the board on this stuff. I like Clinton did right with the debt and the deficit and some of the other things, but the Monica thing and all that. He had some problems, you gotta admit, but I don't know. I mean,
because I like your comments.
I'm
an equal poop on.
I'm an equal opportunity offender, I guess. But I want to thank everybody for joining me. I'm gonna go back in the chat room, see if anybody's still alive in there. Cam not working? Oh, not for the show. Oh, the cam wasn't on, Rolando. And oh. All right, and
I think you're right. I think the camera was never on.
B-Shot, thank you for coming in. I'll see you over in the Galactica Forum, and I'm going to try and get somebody on from the program to be a guest on the show. So help me spread the word over there to get the people. That's my little community now, the Galactica. Subject to Galactica, I think it's going to be called. But anyway, next week, I don't have anybody signed up for the show yet, but I'm still working on that.
I can be your guest.
What the hell? You're right. How many shows are you going to do?
I'll be your guest.
You got a blogger. You got to get a blogger.
I'll be your guest.
I'll bring the goof on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see y'all next week. Watch the inauguration tomorrow, and stay out of trouble. Bye.